8 o'clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM flagship station of the reigning 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. I'm going to continue to milk that until I can no longer say it. So right now they are the reigning Western Conference champions in the National Hockey League. Hey, we are streaming live on the LV Sports Network, and keeping with the holiday spirit, I was going to do the show in costume, but I'm on a headset, so you can see my costume back there. It's kind of behind over my shoulder if you're watching on Facebook Live. Today, as you can see, if you're checking out Facebook Live, again, no costumes, but if you are listening for the first time, this is actually Out of Line, and we are right here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9. I'm Brian Feldman, and directly in front of me on your radio is producer and Lotus Broadcasting on-air personality and Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent. Man, that was a whole mouthful. We gave you a new title. That's Chris Magnum Chapman. And you can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM and like us on Facebook. That's Out of Line, OUTTALINE. Callers are welcome. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is sponsored by the soon-to-be title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Group at 3145 St. Rose Parkway, Suite 201 in Henderson. On tap, a better World Series than I thought. The question, will the Vegas Golden Knights continue to be streaky, will be answered, and Derek England's thoughts on why not enough goals are being scored. Alan Snell from the LVSportsBiz.com, his book is just about to be on the shelves, and we will talk to Alan in a little while. Really excited about that. And Emily Van Buskirk, college football writer for Yard Barker, and her national podcast co-host, Kaylee Krish, will hopefully convince me that somebody, anybody, has a chance to beat Alabama in college football. Sorry, man, I do not think so. And can Magnum, the UNLV football pregame host, tell us anything positive about a team that hasn't won a game in a month and a half and might not win another game this year? And, of course, week 8 in the NFL. Our picks of the week have been super hot. Mags won again. Him and Caleb Herring have only lost one on the year, so you might want to take their pick over mine. I think I'm like 4-3. Hey, that's What's on Tap. And, again, it's thanks to Cardinal Financial Company. Nationwide with a local office here in Las Vegas area, whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance the home you're in right now, the Cardinal Financial Company has the mortgage program you're looking for. From standard conventional and FHA to down payment assistance and lending, paid MI. Looking to buy a condo, townhouse, or investment property, Cardinal Financial's got you. Many times when the bank says no, the Cardinal Financial Company says yes. Cardinal Financial is the first and last place to call when you need home financing. For detailed information or to apply online, go to cardinalfinancial.com. And by the way, when I'm not in studio or at a sporting event, I am in my office as a senior loan officer at Cardinal Financial, helping to make Vegas dreams a reality. As a matter of fact, if you have any questions, give me a call, 702-623-8236. Would be happy to help you out. That's What's on Tap.
I just wanted to have another good at bat. I felt really good off in the first two at bats. I felt like I've seen him well. He pitched lights out. He was unbelievable. He was spotting everything he wanted, and he was getting us all over the place. But I was feeling good about my at bats, and I was feeling good about that one. Got up 3-0. He fought back, and he kind of went the same sequence as the at-bat before. He tried to go backdoor cutter. So, watch out.
Crazy stuff. I mean, you're talking about a World Series that is absolutely insanely good. And way better than I thought it would be. I really thought we were going to be in for a stinker. I thought that it was going to be all Boston Red Sox. And it's not. It's hot. And it is actually 3-1 right now. But I'll tell you what, it's been an entertaining World Series. I mean, if you saw Game 3 of this World Series, the longest game in World Series history, 18 innings, Max Muncy, a guy that a couple of years ago was let go by the Oakland A's, a guy that was in the minor leagues, went to his dad, completely reconfigured his swing, started this year in the minors, and ended up hitting, 35 home runs this year including a monster in Game 3, or this series might be over already. Matter of fact, it would be, because it'd be over. And I think I said last week, by the time we did this show, the World Series would be over. And, Chris, you said they'd win one game, and they did. And I said if it wasn't over by the time our show was on, it would be over by the end of Sunday. And I still feel that way. I just don't think, man, Boston just doesn't go away. They're a gnat that's going to bother the hell out of you till they win the series.
Well, last night I think was very defeating for the Dodgers because they took the 4-0 lead. And then after the sixth inning, the wheels fell off. And to be perfectly honest with you, they shouldn't have won Friday night. Ian Kinsler crapped all over himself in that game. He got nailed at the plate, which would have ended the game, basically. Then he makes that throwing error, I think it was in the 13th inning, where he was off balance. And, dude, you hold the ball, you keep a runner on first and third. Instead, he throws it away. The Dodgers end up scoring the tying run. And I don't know what to say about Nathan Eovaldi. I mean, the guy was a starter for most of his career, but I think that game that he pitched the other night was probably the best start of his career, because I don't know if he's ever gone. What did he go, seven innings?
7 innings, 98 pitches.
Gave up one run, and he made one mistake the entire...
I don't even know that it was a mistake. It was just well hit.
It's a mistake because the guy hit a home run.
Right.
But, you know, and like Muncy said, he tried to do the same thing he did to him on the last at-bat, and Muncy almost hit it out earlier in the game when it just went foul. But I think the Red Sox are the superior team. I don't think there's any question about that. I never thought it was in doubt. Although I thought last night there was a moment where I'm like, you know what? The Dodgers are about to make this a series. And, you know, I mean, people will criticize Dave Roberts. And the reality is none of us know better than Dave Roberts. None of us know better than Alex Cora. You know, we could sit there and say, oh, well, this guy should have done that. And I didn't like the way Cora managed his bench on Friday night. But the reality is, those guys are there because they're really good at what they do. None of us listening or on the show or on any show, unless they've been there, can really sit there and say that they're better than that. They would have done this and they would have done that, because the reality is we may have, but over the course of 162 games and over the course of the entire playoffs, none of us are better than those guys. And Alex Cora, you know, I think a lot of times the question is, when an American League manager has to manage real baseball, a.k.a. in the National League parks, we see them exposed. And I thought Alex Cora was exposed a little bit on Friday night, but the team came back and they rallied around them, and they won last night. And for Boston, they may win tonight. If not, the Dodgers aren't going to win three straight.
Let me tell you something. Alex Cora has the luxury of one of the deepest benches I have seen in a long time in Major League Baseball. It's not a fluke, Chris, that this team won 108 games during the regular season. I've been saying since July, no one is beating the Boston Red Sox in a seven-game series. I will say that Game 3, I'm so happy. I didn't start watching that game till the eighth inning. And I saw over a game, man. You want to talk about getting your money's worth if you're a fan of that game? You got to see two baseball games for the price of one. I don't know how you beat that. I really don't. I think it's a pretty cool thing when you can see that many pitchers come in and shut down teams with the offensive firepower of the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Boston Red Sox. If you were to tell me, Mags, that Mookie Betts would hardly be a factor in this series after what he did this year in Major League Baseball, I would have told you were out of your mind. But Mookie Betts, really, other than defensively, isn't really a factor at all so far in the first four games of this World Series. And that is a shocker. It's a shocker that David Price is pitching the best postseason baseball of his career. Just in general, you always see these guys come through, and that's what's so blazing about this. Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, by the way, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a short home run from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day. We are there every Monday night for Monday Night Football, giving away wing parties, giving away replica jerseys, all kinds of cool stuff, so make sure you check it out. But there was nothing more blazing, Mags, than Game 3 of this World Series. 18 innings. Max Muncy, the most unlikely story again, as I mentioned. 35 home runs this year. Nobody could have predicted it, but he closes out a 7-hour and 20-minute game, the longest World Series game in history, the longest postseason game in history, 18 innings, and the third walk-off home run in Dodgers postseason history. Of course, no one will forget Kirk Gibson's 1988, the last time the Dodgers won the World Series, and I'm afraid it's going to remain the last time the Dodgers won the World Series. But the other real unlikely here, as you mentioned, I got to give it to Nathan Eovaldi, too. That guy couldn't have done any better. Chris, as you said, he was projected as the Game 4 starter. He comes in 98 pitches over seven innings pitched. This guy did everything he could do. And you could see it all. The Red Sox patted him on the back. It was them that didn't do their job. He kept him in the game, and they just couldn't win it. But I'll tell you what, Boston, they're using him. He's using them. He commands way too much money. He's going to be a free agent. He won't be a Red Sox no matter what happens next year. But you want to talk about a guy that just added some zeros to his paycheck and added some length to a career. Nathan Eovaldi, man, this is a guy that's going to be around for a while and love his stuff. He was still throwing 99 miles an hour, 90 pitches into his appearance. Unbelievable. And you may see him again if somehow LA is able to win this game and go on to game six, but it's not going to go longer. And the guy that was really blazing, man, Mags, how about Steve Pierce, man? Only one other postseason appearance. It was in 2008. He appeared for the Baltimore Orioles. 1-for-17 in that postseason. This guy was nothing short of spectacular. In the eighth inning off, Kenley Jensen bangs a one-out home run to tie the game. And then what does he do? He comes up in the next inning in the top of the ninth and hits a three-run triple with the bases loaded. They were up run. Just talk about insurance runs. And what a moment for this guy, man. You know, he's known for he's known for hitting off of lefties, you know, but both his big hits came off right-handed hitters today. A 35-year-old journeyman. This guy's played for like every team in the major leagues. I love stories like this in the postseason, man. That's what makes postseason baseball, postseason football, hockey, basketball. It makes it so great because heroes and stars are born that you would never think of. A 35-year-old journeyman, man, he's making history right now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the guy was pretty much unheard of. I mean, I know he, I think he came up in the Pirates organization and played with the Orioles for a little bit, but a guy who, like you said, he's a journeyman and he's been around a while and he finally gets the job done. But, you know, that's what the World Series is about. It's always about guys who step up, who really we don't think of stepping up. I mean, I remember back when the Twins were really good, they had guys like Kent Herbeck who were good players, but they were never Hall of Fame players. The Yankees always had guys like Luis Soho who stepped up, or Brett Boone, or you know, obviously everyone always thinks of the Jeters and Mariano Rivera with the Yankee dynasty. Yeah. But over the course of their World Series runs, they always had guys who were unheralded. And I think in order to win a World Series, you need guys like that, guys who you don't really think of are going to step up. I mean, my team, when the Mets won the World Series, was Mookie Wilson who had the biggest hit. You know, Mookie Wilson was a good player, but he wasn't an all-star.
What about, Mags, I said, you know, when the Braves were through their run in the early part in the one World Series, Dirt Lemke. I mean, Mark Lemke, the second baseman, the guy would hit 182 on the season and then go 389 in the postseason and become a hero. Yeah, you got to love those. Yeah, the Braves had them all. The no-name guys that
Deion
came through
Sanders.
Well, a different story, but,
What was his name? Ron Gant. Had the biggest forearms, I think, or biggest biceps I think I've ever. That guy.
Yeah, he could have played football.
There wasn't a uniform that could fit that guy and make him look small.
No. some good players. You know, and the one thing with the Boston Red Sox right now, it's always you see the great teams of the great closer. And Kimbrel, great story behind him. But, man, is he funky. It's like he's flying his own airplane before he delivers the pitch with his arm kind of out there. And, you know, the big story about him a couple years ago was him tipping pitches. And, you know, they were saying by the way he held his glove, you could tell what he was going to throw, and he had to correct that. Almost like it was a pretty cool story. But it's a lot of fun to watch him pitch. I just you know, the only thing is, Mags, why I want Boston to sweep this, or not to sweep the series, but to win game five tonight. I want them to win game five so they don't get to go home and win it in front of their home crowd. Let them win it in L.A. It's the only little, if there's any kind of silver lining, that would be for all of us that are just sick of Boston winning so much in football, in baseball and basketball. They're right on the cusp as well. I'm tired of it. And so let them win the World Series in L.A. so at least they can't celebrate and I'll storm the field.
Yeah, I think they showed something the other day that since the Patriots won their first Super Bowl in 2002 season, Boston, I think, has been in a championship series in one of the four major sports like 15 of the 18 years since they won that first Super Bowl. I mean, the Red Sox, they're on the verge of winning their fourth World Series. The Patriots have won five Super Bowls. They've lost three. The Bruins have won a Stanley Cup. The Celtics have won an NBA title. Honestly, as a guy who grew up in the New York area,
you got to hate it.
It's sickening.
You got to hate it.
It's an undeserving sports city because they're all degenerate masses. I'm not going to say the word in that city. There's a word that people from the Northeast like to refer to people from Boston as. I'm sure Chris Wynn, who's listening, knows exactly what I'm talking about. But it's sickening. I don't want to see this city win anymore. I'm tired of them. I hate the city. I can't stand being there. I can't stand Massachusetts. I want them to lose in everything. Like, I'm a bitter. I don't hide it. I am a bitter New York sports fan because I hate that city so much. I want Boston College to lose every game. I want Northeastern to lose every game. I don't even want to see their high school teams win. In the Little League World Series, I'll root against Massachusetts. I'll root for Venezuela. I'll root for Panama. I don't care. I'm just so sick of Massachusetts and Boston winning. And I think unless you're from that city, you probably feel the same way. I mean, that city has won more championships in the last 20 years than I think you, me, and anyone else who's listening outside of Boston, unless you're like a Lakers fan or Chicago Bulls fan, you have no idea what it's like to be a dynasty because we don't really see it much in sports anymore. The Yankees, the Lakers.
What about a dynasty in several different
sports?
It's a
city dynasty. That's crazy thing.
That's what's sickening, and you're right. It's sickening because we're sick with envy. I mean, that's the real truth.
Oh, yeah,
there's no
yeah.
question about it. I would just like to know what it's like to cheer for a team that plays in a Super Bowl.
I'd love
to know what that's like, man.
I loathe the day that scumbag Bill Belichick resigned as head coach of the New York Jets on a freaking napkin.
Max,
that was his resignation letter.
That is as sour grapes as it comes, and I can get it. I understand.
Mean, and you know, the worst part is I saw an interview with Chad Pennington, who was the Jets quarterback at the time. And actually, he was drafted the year that Belichick resigned. But he was asked about it, and he said, absolutely, we would have won with Bill Belichick as our coach. So it's a punch in the gut every time the Patriots win something. Like, look, I'm not a Yankees fan, so the Red Sox winning doesn't hurt as much. The Celtics have only won one title. The Bruins, they beat Vancouver, 10 years ago. So that doesn't hurt as much to me as watching the Patriots win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, the Patriots, you know, it's funny because everyone I talk to, they are already cementing and handing the NFC to the LA Rams and handing the AFC to the Kansas City Chiefs. And now, I'll tell you right now, do not think for one minute that the New England Patriots still can't win the AFC this year. As good as the Chiefs have played, the postseason is a whole different animal. And there is nobody more fine-tuned for the playoffs in the National Football League than New England Patriots. So I hope Kansas City can get by them when it's all said and done. But the AFC looks damn weak to me. And Kansas City looks like they're way better than anybody else.
At this point, there's two good teams in the AFC, Kansas City and New England.
That's it. And it really sucks.
The NFC, I still think, is a little wide open because the Vikings are playing better.
I don't say that. But Kirk Cousins is taking nobody anywhere when it comes to the postseason. He's another Andy Dalton in the postseason.
Well,
he'll get you there, and then you'll lose.
Well, that remains to be seen. I'm not sold on the Eagles, but the Rams obviously look to be the class of the NFC. But
no,
you know
there's
what?
No doubt.
They they haven't proven that they can win in the playoffs. So,
and Jared Goff, like I said, let him get there and see what happens again, because it's a whole different story. But the Rams are, you know, they're the most well-rounded team, I think, in the National Football League right now. And if they can be healthy in the defensive secondary and they get healthy for the postseason, they are going to be an awful tough out. The key is going to be disrupting a young Jared Goff by whatever defense they face. And that's going to be the key to taking this team out. I don't see anybody in the NFC really that poses a real threat.
By the way, we've got some breaking news. The Cavaliers have fired head coach Tyronn Lue.
Wow, shocking. You heard about that, and I want to move on. We'll talk about the National Football League in a bit, but Jacksonville, you know, London's their second home, and I guess they got real comfortable where the four of their players get into a fight at a nightclub. They don't want to pay a bill. I mean, Mags, are you kidding me? Listen, let's talk about the Golden Knights, man. Hit it, man.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, Chris, you know, streaky is a word I'm hearing for the Golden Knights, and it's so funny because it's still so damn early in the season. Yeah, they lose three, they win three, now they lose two. Mags, this is hockey. It's an 82-game season. The biggest concern I have Friday night was the injury to Max Pacioretty. I saw it. It was a vicious hit. It almost could have been called elbowing because it was up near his head. But the bottom line is that, to me, was my biggest concern. This team is out shooting everyone they play. In hockey, that eventually is going to equate to goals. If you play this sport or understand it, the key is shoot as often and as much as you can. Not like basketball where you want to take a higher percentage shot. Hockey is a completely different animal. You want to put the puck on the net. The Vegas Golden Knights are doing that. They've just got to start bearing it. They have also come up against a couple of really hot goaltenders.
Well, Vasilevsky, one of the best in the NHL, and that's, of course, Tampa goalie. Markstrom, that's a guy they should have put a few more goals on. You know, sometimes the luck just isn't there. You know, there was a play in the Vancouver game where Markstrom made a terrible play on the puck, and he basically centered it right to William Karlsson. Last year, I think that's a goal. It just didn't bounce that way this year. You know, the other night against Tampa, Riley Smith had an opportunity to put a goal in the net, and for whatever reason, he kind of missed the shot. You know, there's just shots that aren't going in. And, you know, I was in the locker room yesterday, and if you listen to the pregame show tonight, you'll hear what William Karlsson has to say about that, because I talked to him for the pregame interview for tonight's game against Ottawa. And, you know, we talk a little bit about why the puck isn't going in. But, you know, it's just a weird thing. Hockey, you may not believe it, but there is a little bit of luck involved. And last year, the Golden Knights seemed to have all the luck. Right now, it doesn't seem to be there. And I don't think the guys are panicking, which is a good thing, because you talk to Coach Gallant, and he says, look, we played a good game. The puck just didn't go in the net. Some people may say, well, then you didn't play a good game, but the reality is they're winning faceoffs. They're not giving up a ton of power play goals. The power play could be better, but they scored a goal on the power play the other night against a very good penalty kill. I think Tampa may have the best penalty kill in the entire NHL. They were able to score a power play goal. You know, and they have a lot of injuries. And I know that some guys will tell you that that's not an excuse. It's part of the game, and it is. But when you put this team together back in September, you had plans for a second line of Alex Tuch, Max Pacioretty,
and Peter Stastny,
and Paul Stastny.
Paul Stastny.
And two of those guys are now out. When Pacioretty was in there, he was playing with Holla and a couple of different other guys because Tuch was out. So
that's like last year, taking Perron and Neal both out of the lineup at the same
because
time.
Because those were the two guys who, and to be honest with you, I think both Stastny and Pacioretty were an upgrade from Neal and Perron.
Without question.
Although I really like both of those players. I just thought that Stastny did a lot more on the defensive end.
Pacioretty is a goal scorer, man. Now, the guy puts the puck in the net.
And now we don't know how long he's going to be out. Yeah. We were told day-to-day. But that's really it.
It's concussion protocol. You never know.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, something like that, you're going to take serious if it turns out that that's the case. But, I mean, the hit was kind of, I don't think it was intentional, because I think towards the end, Pacioretty kind of made like a, He took a different angle than what I think the Colburn was it was going to hit him. But the reality is they got to start scoring goals. And tonight you're playing a team that you should beat.
I was going to say, I think this is a big game for them for their confidence factor, Chris. I think that this team needs to win this game today. They are playing. It's 5 o'clock today against the Ottawa Senators. It is a good matchup for the Golden Knights. They fare well, and I think it's a really big game for them to win. They go play two games on the road. They got to go to Nashville, then to St. Louis after that. And I think it is a big game and a meaningful game for the Golden Knights today. And I do think they will get off the snide. They won't lose their third in a row again. They'll win this game. They'll get back to 500, and you'll eventually see this team start playing better. I still think we're looking at a playoff team. I just don't want people to get caught up and start getting negative on a team that is going to be okay. This is a very tight-knit group, one of the best units I've seen, and I think once they get healthy, they're well-coached. Don't panic. This is a playoff hockey team. Don't expect what you saw last year. Don't expect the same number of points. Expect to see quality hockey and keep coming out, man. You're going to enjoy yourself. Listen, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Alan Snell. We'll get him on the phone. We've got Emily Van Busker coming up in a little bit as well. Got to talk some college football. Somebody's got to convince me that somebody can beat Alabama and that everyone's just not playing for second place in college football right now. And, of course, we've got week 8 in the NFL and our pick segment coming up as well. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I'm Brian Feldman, Chris Magnum Chapman, and on the phone right now for the LV Sports Biz Minute, SpongeBob SquarePants, right? If you're watching Facebook, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I've got Alan Snell. Alan, where are you at, man?
I'm on Charleston heading up to Red Rock. You know that, Brian. Come on now.
I know you could be in Red Rock, so you're not quite there yet. I was going to say probably in Red Rock National Park, riding on that big 13-mile loop. He is always on his bike. And, Alan, finally, the book is ready. It's out, or it's about to come out. You showed me the final proof on Friday, the actual paperback version. I'm waiting for my autograph version. Alan, talk a little about this. I know this is something that I can't say it's a lifelong type of project or thought, because I don't think you ever thought the road would lead to this, but pretty inspirational, my friend.
Yeah, thank you so much for allowing me the time to talk about this, Brian. The proof of the book came on Friday, and I literally used the 18-inning game as background noise for me to read out every last word and sentence to give a final edit. And the book will be re-edited on Monday, and it should be out in 2 weeks. The book is called Long Road Back to Las Vegas, and it documents the journey and the passage of being slammed by a distracted motorist in Fort Pierce, Florida, in March of 2017, and the entire process of moving back to Las Vegas, where I had worked previously with the Review Journal covering the business side of sports, and then creating LVSportsBiz.com to carve out this interesting little news niche to document this fascinating time period in Las Vegas history, with the advent of all the stadiums being built and the new teams coming online, and obviously all our other past sports. But it's a very multi-dimensional book. It talks about what it's like to go through the trauma. And there's a lot of sports. I think if you're a sports fan, I think you'll love the book. I include a lot of original reporting from the Vegas Golden Knights. In fact, the subtitle really is it actually includes the Golden Knights. It talks about how Las Vegas and the Golden Knights helps heal a journalist's wound. So I think it's a book for a lot of type of people, and the overarching theme is, I think, an issue we can all relate to, and that is moving forward from trauma, finding purpose, and ultimately affirmation and feeling complete again.
Yeah, Alan, you know, getting to know you this past year has been a pleasure, and hearing the story firsthand, has, like I said, it has been really, truly inspirational. It's crazy how you just, you know, really you were done, you moved to Florida, this happens, and you morph your way back to Vegas, get some sponsors, you have this idea now, we're talking about over 100,000 subscribers to the website, lvsportsbiz.com, the business side of sports, some very unique reporting, some incredible photography, and now the book. Alan, was the book an idea before you came out here and you got involved with LVSportsBiz.com, you created, or how much of the book was influenced by the Golden Knights by saying, wow, this really is beyond bucket list material, and did that have a lot to do with it?
Yeah, in fact, that's why the Golden Knights does get some mention in the subtitle. You know, when I was moving out to Las Vegas, I spent about 3 months recuperating back in Florida, drove back out here, and as I was documenting the Golden Knights, which if you think about it from this business standpoint, it's the ultimate startup business. I mean, that's how I was kind of looking at it. And I was documenting this amazing season that also included the horrible October 1st tragedy as well. So the team actually transcended the role of sports team. It was actually kind of a community institution, if you will, that rallied the entire Las Vegas area. And then it sucked me into it as well. As I was covering the Golden Knights, I found that it served as an emotional anchor. It was something I knew I could cover every week. There was a lot of sports business stories coming out of the Vegas Golden Knights literally on a weekly basis. And that, along with the Raiders Stadium project, was really 1 and 1A in terms of the content I was providing. And I was realizing that the Golden Knights season was a vehicle for me to move forward and to serve as an emotional anchor, provide, you know, content for LV Sports Biz. And I have a tremendous sister who is a clinical psychologist who actually helped me and worked me through some issues, because I was looking at the story production of LV Sports Biz. I've literally written 550 byline stories since the launch of the site in June 2017, and people who get through trauma and deal with trauma will often throw themselves into other items or throw themselves into other things to sometimes avoid dealing with the after effects of a trauma. And that's another issue I kind of raise in the book as well, in terms of the balance that you need in your life and the kind of strategies you need to deal with traumatic activities. In fact, the last two chapters, I think, hopefully tie up the themes in the book in terms of a bicycle ride I did to the top, talking about Red Rock Loop, to the Overlook, and the first time I did that bike ride after I got hit, and just the emotional outpouring that occurred there. And then the last chapter of the book deals with some very practical things to think about as you move forward dealing with trauma, because as my sister put it, if you don't deal with the trauma has a way of dealing with you. So I think it's a cool book. It's not very long. Like you mentioned, it's going to be out in about 2 weeks. I'll be having book signings throughout the Las Vegas area, and I really need to thank the people who have actually offered book signings. In fact, just last night, my good buddy who owns Broadway Pizzeria, he just said, hey, you know, we'll pick a day and, you know, we'll bring a box of your books in and we'll have a book signing. So there will be periodic book signings, and I'll be giving out my email and also Amazon addresses to buy it. But I really appreciate the time to just share my story, and your show as a platform to tell people about it. It means a lot, Brian.
Oh, my pleasure, Alan. Are you kidding me? You mean a lot to us. You do some great things around town. You'll always see Alan, like you said, at the Golden Knights game. He'll get their way early, and he is inspired, and he's constantly writing. And every time there's some event of some importance, Alan's there with a completely different side of what's going on. It's pretty cool. Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. Definitely check it out. Become one of the 100,000-plus subscribers today, man. We appreciate you, Alan. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Have a great week, guys, and hopefully I'll see you at the game later, Brian.
Absolutely. Okay, and time for Fact This. Oh, yeah, that Emily is part of Fact This. There we go. Go ahead. You got it? Okay.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
All right, it's a fact they were, are, and will continue to be the number one team in the country. Of course, I'm talking about the Alabama Crimson Tide. This entire college season, in my opinion, is a waste of time, unless you're wondering who's going to come in second place when it's all said and done. It is clearly Alabama and everybody else. Emily, please tell me you're not buying into Clemson's success in respect to Dabo Swinney being able to devise a game plan to beat the Crimson Tide this year.
I am absolutely not going to buy into that. But Clemson does have a relatively easy path the rest of the way, so they're going to remain in the conversation for the next several weeks until the playoffs. You're going to have to deal with it. Sorry, Brian.
Well, of course they're going to remain in the playoffs. They've got to keep it interesting. I mean, Emily, I look at this season, and of course, Emily is a college football writer for Yard Barker and a national podcast called Sideline Sass. It's awesome that she does with Kaylee Krish. I don't know if Kaylee's joining you this morning. I know it's awful early, but if she is, either one of you can answer the question, Em. What are we looking at? I know you went to the Navy and Midshipman game. A lot of people are bragging about this, the Navy-Notre Dame game, the Midshipman versus, of course, the Fighting Irish, and a lot of people are bragging about this Notre Dame team, saying that they're a force to be reckoned with. Some people have them as number three. I've got them number four right now when it all says it's said and done. I think LSU is clearly the number three team in the country, and I'm not sure who would win between LSU and Clemson, but neither one of those teams beating Alabama.
Hey, Brian, it is Kaylee. Good morning. I am awake this morning, but I do want to say, you know, we did get the opportunity to see Notre Dame yesterday, and to be quite honest, number three does seem high to me. Yes, they are a very good football team. They're pretty complete, especially with their running game, followed up with the passing game. They're pretty complete on offense. I just don't know if this is the type of team that can beat a Clemson or especially an Alabama. So I think you're right when you're saying the season feels a little bit of a waste. Everybody seems to be beating each other up except for Alabama. So we'll have to see what happens.
You know, a couple of things that have been concerned. Notre Dame, you guys got to watch him yesterday. I think Dexter Williams is a special player. I think he had close to 150 yards yesterday, three TDs. A good, solid back that I think will be good in the NFL. But again, he's not going to be good against Alabama. Nobody's going to be. But the things that I'm concerned about, Power 5 conferences, I don't think we're going to see anybody in the playoffs. I'm not even going to worry about the Pac-12. But the Big 12 now, with Texas losing yesterday, is the Big 12, can Oklahoma, is their resume good enough to put them in a playoff right now?
I don't know. I think we're going to see another year with the Big 12 shutout, which is unfortunate, but they're having the same problem the Pac-12 is, where they just can't get away and escape from being eaten alive by their own lower tier teams. When you have teams like Kansas finally resurging and having a decent year and upsetting people, and teams like TCU losing, who should be up there winning, you know, makes no sense why Gary Patterson's team should be struggling like that. So I think, you know, we're going to see another year where these Power 5s, Pac-12, Big 12, get shut out yet again.
Well, the Pac-12 yesterday was absolutely insane. Every single underdog in the Pac-12 won yesterday. I don't know how the hell that happens. You're going to have to explain that to me. And one other question I got to ask you before you answer that question. We're looking at number two and number three. Obviously, Clemson's going to be number two right now in everybody's polls. But is there a possibility that LSU, a one-loss team, can leapfrog an undefeated team? I think we saw it happen years ago where Florida State got leapfrogged. I think it was just 2014, and they were undefeated. This LSU team, if you look, they've got five wins over, what is it, in the opponents, like five wins over top five or top ten power conference teams, where I think Clemson has three. Is there any way, if those two teams remain where they are now and Clemson doesn't lose a game, is it at all possible for LSU to leapfrog them into number two? Not that it really matters, because they'd play each other in the playoffs anyways.
Exactly, and I think your question is going to be answered, you know, on November 13th when we see Alabama play LSU in a big matchup, and that game is at LSU, so that's their biggest chance to kind of show everybody, this is what we've got. And honestly, Kaylee and I covered LSU early on in the season before people really understood what they were and what Orgeron's got going on. And it was very impressive, the amount of energy they bring in a game and how talented and athletic they are. So I'm actually really excited for that game. And we could see in this season, why can't we see an upset of Alabama there?
Well, you guys saw the game yesterday. Kaylee, what about U of M? I mean, how did they get in front of Notre Dame? Where I think, you know, how does that happen? It can't, can it?
I really am not sure. I think that they...
Notre Dame's schedule is so easy down the stretch that there's no way that anyone could touch them. They don't play anybody. I think their hardest game at the end of the season is Syracuse. You know what I mean? And their schedule and their body of work is so unimpressive. Their biggest win is over Michigan, and then they beat Stanford. Good for them. Everybody's beating Stanford.
Which is hard to – that's why it was so difficult to criticize them or watch them yesterday, because, yes, they look really good, but once again, they haven't played anyone. So what are we really talking about here?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But with U of M's one loss coming to Notre Dame, if Notre Dame runs the table and say U of M gets by Ohio State at the Horseshoe at the end of the year, can you look at the body of work? And even though Notre Dame beat U of M, is there any chance if both these teams win out that U of M gets into the playoff? You're the Big Ten champion, but if, you know, does LSU get shut out with two losses if their loss comes in a 1 or 2 point loss to Alabama?
You know what, Brian? We are not on the committee, and I can't imagine how hard that job is going to be come end of the season. I have to believe that an LSU team would be considered more highly than a Michigan team with those kind of numbers, just given the body of work and who they have to play. But at the end of the day, I don't know what their eye test is and what they're going to put in the final. So we're going to have to wait and see as we get closer how much they're going to value that Notre Dame loss and how much that's going to hurt them.
Yeah, I mean, even Georgia. You know, you got to look at Georgia. What an impressive win they had coming, rebounding from a loss to a really good LSU team, another team that's vying to get in. I mean, there's no way we're going to see three Southeastern Conference teams in the playoff, right?
Definitely not. That's not going to happen. You know, they're definitely going to have to kick one out. And unfortunately, I do kind of have a feeling it's going to be Georgia. I don't know if they can climb out of the hole that they put themselves in with that loss. So good for them for beating Florida yesterday. They really needed that to keep their momentum going for this season. But as far as the playoff run goes, I think it's looking pretty doubtful for Georgia.
Listen, I want you girls to let everyone know about Sideline Sass. It is a really cool podcast. They have everyone from Joey Chestnut, the famous hot food competition guy on there, to just about anybody in sports. It's a lot of fun to check the girls out on their national podcast. Emily, man, I don't know anybody who covers college football and basketball better than her. What do we got looking up for you guys down the road?
Yeah, we're trying to work on that right now. We're definitely – the Pac-12 has been – so insane that we're probably going to try and cover some towards the end. The infamous Apple Cup between Washington and Washington State up in Pullman is something that's been on our list for a while, and I love Gardner Minshew. I think he should be getting some Heisman love at this point. I think we're probably going to see that, the Washington State quarterback, and we're going to go out to Texas and check out some Texas teams, maybe hit the Big 12 championship instead of the Pac-12 this year, and then we'll be doing college football playoffs. The national championship is in our backyard this year at Levi's Stadium. And we'll be doing the Heisman, our favorite. So lots of stuff coming up.
Yeah, the national championship game. So who's going to finish in second place this year? Because I think that's all that everyone's interested in.
I mean, right now I don't see it changing from a 1-2 Alabama-Clemson, you know, but someone might try and make a case for Notre Dame to jump them. Just because if they go undefeated and
yeah, but I'm saying who's gonna play Alabama in the championship game, because that'll be the team that finishes second. Who do you think is gonna play them in the championship game when it's all said and done? So if it ends up LSU, Clemson, who wins that game?
Ooh, I'm gonna go LSU. I believe in Orgeron.
Yeah, I love that Orgeron too. But the problem is like you said, that game in Alabama, LSU is gonna have two losses and they might get bumped because of it.
I know, and that is the nature of the beast. But I'm going to hold out hope, because I feel like Alabama, yes, they're good. Yes, we know they're like an NFL team. But I still haven't seen them play anyone that I consider a real true test. So when they play LSU, that's going to – then I'll shut up and say, okay, if they beat LSU, I believe in Nick Saban. They're the best team in the world, probably the universe, fine.
Well, there's no doubt if they beat if they are the best team in the universe, I think they will beat LSU. If LSU beats Alabama, that'll mix up everything again. She's Emily Van Buskirk, football writer for Yard Barker. You can follow her on Twitter at EmilNem. And Kaylee Chris, she's a sportscaster and also a co-host with Emily on Sideline Sass. And you can follow her at Miss Krish. Appreciate both of you joining the show.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to be on.
Absolutely, and always great insight from those two. Mags, we're going to skip that last break if we can. Or we got it? Okay, we're going to take a real quick break right now. We'll come back. We've got our NFL picks, and we'll try to get a little UNLV football in as well. So, Chris, you did the pregame show yesterday for UNLV.
Yeah.
I listened to the game, and... I mean, I don't even want to say wow anymore. I mean, at the post game, Tony Sanchez, you know, in his own way, used excuses and definitely tried. Was very happy when a reporter brought up Armani Rogers and how different this team was. You could tell it took a little bit of the monkey off his back. The big question, all I constantly hear, and we were talking about it during our short break, is will Tony Sanchez have a job at this time next year coaching the Rebels? And my answer is absolutely yes. Ed Graney had a great article, if you haven't read it, in the Review Journal today, explaining why, man. $900,000 they'd have to pay him. He's supposed to be here since, is it 2021 or 2022? They're not going to let him go after this season. I don't care if they don't win and lose another game. I thought they would. And I just don't think Desiree Francois can do it. You know, she's never hired a coach at this level. So she hasn't done it yet. It's going to be her first experience. It could end up being terrible. The whole thing is should he get fired? Absolutely. 100%. I'm not saying he shouldn't based on what I'm seeing the body work. Who do you get, though, that's not going to be the same thing all over again?
Well, the reality is, I think at some point you have to look at the defense, and you have to really question what Tony Sanchez has done on the defensive side of the ball. San Jose State had run for about 300 combined yards since week one. They ran for 141 against UC Davis, who they played in week one. Since that time, they have had about 175, 200 yards rushing. They had two guys... Yesterday, one guy went over 100 yards. The other guy had 63 yards. They gave up 166 yards to two guys on the ground. If not for some sacks on Josh Love, they give up almost 200 yards on the ground to this joke team. The reality is, UNLV, I mean, you look at the game Tylee Collins had, 9 receptions, 170 yards, 4 touchdowns, and they lost by 13 points to a terrible team. That is a big, big, big problem. I disagree with you. I think he is going to get fired.
Mags.
I know the case is out there on why he shouldn't. And
about money, brother. About money.
Look, here's the bottom line.
Okay.
UNLV is going into that new stadium that they're building on Las Vegas Boulevard. They are going to have 5,000 people at that game next week against Fresno State, and half of them might be Fresno State fans. You absolutely cannot go into that new stadium that's going to cost you $1 million a game or whatever it is, $250,000 a game to play in when you're drawing 5,000 fans. I like Tony Sanchez. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a good coach. But the reality is the results aren't there. And Desiree Reed-Francois, she's going to have to make a very, very difficult decision. She's been on the job for close to 2 years now. She has not hired anybody. I think she's got the right contacts. I think unless UNLV somehow goes on a win streak at the end of the season, they finish 2-10. I think Tony Sanchez is going to get fired. I honestly believe that.
He should get fired. I mean, come on. We all know that. I'm just telling you, it's not practical based on finances.
One player cannot mean that much to your team.
The bottom line is you're preaching to the choir. I'm saying he's not going to get fired because it comes down to money, and economically it doesn't make sense. Based on the history of UNLV and what they're willing to spend, it doesn't make sense. He's not going to get fired no matter what happens. That's my opinion. I hope you're right. Listen, let's get our NFL picks out. Mags, congratulations. You and Caleb Herring, one loss each. Caleb, I'll tell you right now, took the Vikings, which I think is a pretty good bet. The Saints are at Minnesota. It's a pick 'em. I mean, it's hard to go away from them at home. Their defense is starting to play a little bit like they did last year, which is going to put some pressure on Drew Brees, but I'm not taking that one. Who are you going with? I'll give you mine after yours.
What's the paper line in the Bengals-Buccaneers game?
A Bengals-Buccaneers game is the Bengals are favored by 4 at home.
I want Cincinnati laying the 4.
Okay, I can like that, and I'm going to go with the team I hate. I cannot see Aaron Rodgers looking at a 9.5 point. I think it's the biggest spread against him in his career, Mags. 9.5 points. I granted it's at the LA Rams. Granted the Rams are the best team in the NFC. Rodgers will not lose this game by 9.5 points. They'll keep it close. I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers. This is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 a.m. Thanks, Emily. Thanks, Kaylee. Thanks, Alan Snell. Appreciate y'all. Mags, as always, couldn't do it without you. We will be back same time, same place next week. Definitely 2 week. Tune in. We've got some cool things. Marvin Menzies will be on the show. We'll be talking UNLV basketball. You'll hear from Jordan Caroline and Jakur Justin as well. We'll see you next week. I'm out.